Social impact everywhere.
Welcome back, my fellow social impactors, to another episode of the Social Impactors Podcast. And today we have another special guest for you. We have Joel Solomon. Now, he is the co-founding partner of Renewal Funds, a mission venture capital fund based in Vancouver, investing in Canada and the United States in organic food, non-toxic households, and clean technologies, climate technologies. Now, in his spare time, Joel is a financial activist looking to build a safer, a more fair, and a prosperous future for everyone. So, Joel, I just wanted to take a couple minutes right now to say thanks for being on the podcast with me today.
I really appreciate it, and I'm looking forward to our talk.
Yeah, let's jump right in, because I love the idea of climate technologies. I don't know what non-toxic households is. Organic foods I do, but let's jump into it because I'm super interested about this. The first question I have is kind of just explaining a little bit more about that statement that I just said, explaining who you are, who Joel is, and why you believe you're a social impactor.
Well, I'm in my mid-60s. 35 years ago when I was getting clear about what pathway to take and what to do with my life. There was a lot of turbulence when I grew up in the 60s, et cetera. The world was looking, starting to look like much of what has happened. A lot of the challenges. I was born when there were less than 3 billion people. We're going to hit 8 billion not too long from now. And the challenges of how we're all going to live together in this precious place and have enough resources for everyone and have good lives is a good challenging one. And so I began to look at the role of money, business, and finance as something that was very powerful, obviously, but could be used for good in the long term. That the addition of I really care about what and why and how those features, those forces actually create a fair, clean, just future for everyone because we've got to live together.
Yeah, and this is a conversation, a topic that's quite often on this podcast. But the idea of money is in my mind, and many guests on the show, it's a catalyst, right? It is that way to amplify good and bad, but let's do it for good, right? Let's use money to make the world a better place for everyone.
And it represents human labor and extraction from the planet in one way or another. And those are finite resources. How we use them, with what intentions, with what values, with what we build, are always going to have a big impact on the future. And our job, ultimately, is that we are ancestors of the future. So let's be the best ancestors we can possibly be, including creating a good life for ourselves, our families, our whatever constituencies or circles we move in. But remember that we're not alone, and we do have some responsibility to the long term and to the big picture.
So maybe explaining a little bit more about Renewal Funds. Did you see a gap in the space? Is that why you went and, I mean, you're specifically investing in organic food, you know, non-toxic households and climate technologies. Yes. Why? What was the catalyst for you to create this type of fund?
Well, picking up on the realization that money and business could be a powerful force for good, I looked around at my own life. For one, I was diagnosed with a genetic kidney disease and told that I could die soon, I could live a long time, and there was nothing I could do about it. I didn't buy that diagnosis, the nothing you can do about it, because I was going to live until I didn't. And I better make the most of it while I did. And as I started to think about what does the kidney do, well, it cleans the blood. Why does it have to clean the blood? Because I'm eating, I'm breathing, I'm absorbing things through my skin. Everything affects that. And it became obvious to me that as I learned more about those issues, that there's a whole lot of people that get affected about those things, including everybody. So if I'm going to poison myself, let me at least make conscious choices about it. If I don't want to poison myself, where do I go for products? How do I live a life? I look around at that time, we're talking a good 30, 40 years ago, and I start reading labels on packages and start researching more and finding out that I'm not really clear because of the way the economy has been built, especially at that time, on exactly what it is that I'm dealing with. So it led me very quickly. Food was obviously going to affect my kidney well-being, and I'd rather live longer than less. So that led me into the idea of organic foods. If I'm looking at a label and I can't tell what all that stuff is, that's not as comforting as actually knowing where something came from, how it's grown, what's in it, or manufactured. And then as I become of age more and thinking about environmental issues and how business affects environmental issues and how we all do, et cetera, and I'm watching population growth, among other things, we realize that you can either be more conscious or less conscious about how you enter the marketplace, what kind of products and services you may create, or where you work, where you put your money, what kind of banking institution, what do you invest in. You are connected with your money to people and places that have helped create what you're able to benefit from. So that was not a common premise, or at least I wasn't able to run into it. And as I thought about it more and I looked at the emerging companies that were considering these kinds of questions, I got very excited about the synergy between ambition, accomplishment, and creating a better life for myself and family. And how was it affecting everybody and everything else? So it was kind of a new premise, but it was inspired by watching people who came before me and were starting to push these edges. But it still took a few decades before this began to really ripen fully, which is where we are now. Now there is a lot more attention. There are investment funds, there are jobs, there's banks that are starting to shift their practices. And so a growing amount of the world is moving this direction and realizing that we're all living in the same soup together and we better pay attention.
I like that, living in the same soup together. Yeah, no, it's true. We're a giant melting pot, and that diversity is not going to change. That is going to continually become more diverse as we geolocate or we locate in different areas.
So I got myself involved with the entrepreneurs who were early in these fields. I found it exciting. I learned a lot. And I was very turned on about the idea that I could be a successful business person involved in the economy, but I could be selective about which products, services, and outcomes I was willing to associate myself with. And frankly, where there were opportunities. So I got into the organic food movement. Most people know what that is. And I got there when it was still fairly early, where you had to go to some pretty obscure places to find, quote, cleaner food. And I needed that for my well-being, but it became an investment opportunity and a place to do business. So one of the advantages when you go into something early that other people aren't looking at yet, taking seriously, you do get patted on the head a lot, and kind of, you know, a little bit of condescended to that. What are you doing? There's way more, ways to make money. But what I was finding is that there were companies that were breaking out, and I'll just name a couple of them. But early on, Seventh Generation, which was gets to the non-toxic household. Do you know what your toilet paper is made of and what it's doing to you? Do you know what your dish suds are and where they're going and what they're affecting? And so that's the household part. And then the food was obvious. And so I started there at more consumer goods level. And I watched a field, I got involved, Seventh Generation, Stonyfield Yogurt, local companies here in BC that were doing organic smoothies like Happy Planet, early fair trade organic coffee producers. And it was a very exciting time where these businesses were new. There was great opportunity to be in early. And I just believed in it. It turned out to be successful. I'll just one more bit here is about the technology side and climate technologies or clean tech or environmental tech, however you want to call it. What we build, how we build it, how we do transportation, how we make cities, how we handle farmland, how we handle manufacturing, how we employ people, all of these things end up in the same big pie of what we breathe, what we eat, how we get to live. So soon it became obvious that I was excited to get involved in green building, cleaner transportation, et cetera. I think I've made the point. And so that's where the clean tech lure came, because it's another category. You get a nice diverse portfolio by being in both parts of that. One is very consumer focused. The other can be more industrial or infrastructural. And so there's the quick story.
So with everything you're doing then, and you know, yes, you were invested early into this you know, wave of really living a better life and being realizing we're in one world. But how are you making a positive impact in your community with this? How are you making a positive impact?
Well, there's a whole ecosystem of impacts that follow from whatever choice you make. There's, as I've said a few of these, which is there's the extraction, the manufacturing, the growing, all of that. You could be spraying chemicals all over your workers. You could be draining pesticides into the streams and the water that other people are going to drink. When cell phones came about, what's the iPhone been here 11 years now, 12 years? What's that made of? Oh, are there actually still slaves working on doing some of the mining for this? Am I okay with that? So there's a lot of impact from the choices you make around money and business and everything you do. A lot of different professions to choose from. Then what happens as you become somewhat successful, or let's call it established, you get more established, and then you're able to pass on tips, advice, guidance, introductions, invitations, tips on where some good places to go and meet the right people, etc. So you gradually, I think this happens in every occupation and probably through all times, if you choose to be this kind of person, the more you learn and that you experience and you have access to, the more fun and pleasurable it is to share that with motivated, articulate, promising younger people. And that's the generational transfer of knowledge, expertise, and et cetera. So those are ways you help. Then as you get more established and people might look a bit more to you and what you're doing and why you're doing it and what you have to say, we didn't mention this in the introduction, but I wrote a book a couple of years ago called The Clean Money Revolution, Reinventing Power, Purpose, and Capitalism. And that was an opportunity for me to do the 200-page podcast, so to speak, but the written form of it. And I've just finished the audio book reading, and that'll be out soon. Anyhow, the point there was to talk about some of my own life journey and how I had come to think about these things, because I had to look at a lot of other people that had come before me to figure out my own unique life and hear about their experiences rather than just go into the cookie cutter world. So I wanted to share a personal journey. I wanted to talk about this field that I had watched from close to its infancy, when there were almost no people doing any of the things that we've talked about today. And I did a bit of personal mapping of the ecosystem and where the first places were that I learned from. A lot of interviews and stories about entrepreneurs, about these organizations, and attempting to make a map that other people could explore and then add to the map, et cetera. And then finally, it gave me a chance to do what I'm doing right now, which is a bit of preaching or speaking to the moral and ethical reasons that it's important, both to our own satisfaction, perhaps to where we go after this lifetime, if there's a place to go, but very importantly, that people, like I needed help to hear other people's experience, to read the words of wise people, and so I wanted to share what I could, however imperfect, flawed, and modest it may be. I felt that I had an obligation. I'll add one more thing to that. This kidney diagnosis, that my kidneys were going to fail. I became a Canadian due to other reasons, and the Canadian healthcare system was not only fantastic and supported me, but I was able to get a transplant of a kidney from a friend of mine. And now I'm healthy, happy, and causing more trouble. So, you get a sense of obligation, responsibility over the years as you realize how many people have helped you and how many things have helped you. How do I give back to that? How do I support it? So that's another bit long-winded way to say, therefore, you're able to influence the rest of the community or some amount of it through your own experiences and just share it and be and help others learn similar things or related things.
So how does it feel to be back making trouble?
How does it feel back? Oh, it's really good because there's so many things. Once you start to be someone that looks at how the world works and unfairnesses and damage to things that you think might be affecting your kids and your kids' kids and things like that, it's pretty easy to develop a passion to want to be contributory, to do good, to do less harm, and to pass on what you can.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. I the only reason I bring that up is because anyone in this type of field or who has this mindset is a troublemaker, myself included.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And you end up questioning certain authorities and you disagree with powerful people or industries. And if you speak up and you actually act and you do things to maybe get involved in elections, talk about issues, support those who are spending their lives working on issues at low wages and less of the satisfactions that we who get to enjoy building businesses or have investments work, we get a different kind of reward. So those are important responsibilities, I think obligations, particularly if you're someone who's successful. I think that you've got to ask, it's exciting to make a lot of money, be able to do what you want, supposedly. But my question to myself and everyone else is, how much is enough money? And if you get there, what is it that you're actually going to do about it or do with it? And why don't you start doing that now? Or at least once you've gotten above water and you're actually, you're living a bit more affluence. And there's no reason to make billions of dollars if you're not going to do something that matters. So that inherently puts you in the troublemaker class.
Yeah, exactly. So because this podcast is framed around this idea of social impact, this might be a question that is an obvious answer to you, but I want to ask it anyways. Do you believe social impact is an important part of business?
I do. There's some very pragmatic reasons. I may have touched on some of them a little bit. You got to have employees. Employees, and particularly younger ones, know how to use the internet, and they know how to find out a lot more than I got to when I was younger. I didn't have the tools. They weren't available. If you're going to retain employees, they're going to know what the options are in terms of how other companies do their practices. And they're going to know what you're doing because they don't just have to listen to you tell them. They can go research it and find out. They can look at what's in your products. If you've got a supply chain where you're literally killing people or giving them bad diseases and things like that, you got a problem with employment. Second, you often need some kind of social license. If you're going to be a miner, if you're going to be a resource extractor, if you're going to go around and put fast food stores or put restaurants all over the continent, I want to know where that came from. I want to know, are you using good practices? What kind of harm is coming from your cutting of costs or making cheaper food, et cetera, like that. So you have to have social license. That's a bigger concept, but I think I've touched on it just enough here. And then you also have to live in a world that has regulation, has mores and norms, and you're going to be a citizen as well as just a business person. Well, your social impact is going to ultimately be your karma, or let's say for every action, there are things that happen, and you have some responsibility for the actions that you take. So from the practical to the pragmatic to the career to the deathbed, when you look back on your life, you wonder what your descendants or those who love you or care about you or the people you've affected, what do they think? And depending on what your belief systems are about what happens after life, nonetheless, you have to live with that, and you will live on well or less well in the memories and the choices and the influences that you had while you were alive. Why not have a great deathbed experience and feel good about what you did?
Yeah, that's the deathbed scenario where looking at your deathbed is a really impactful way to look at living a fulfilling life. I've always appreciated that, but it's true. You know, how do you want to go? How do you want to remember the last moments on this world? Yeah. So let's jump into the final question. I love this question because it's building on, you know, we've talked about business, we've talked about who you are, but what is your advice for people listening today to begin building their own impact in the world?
I believe it's very important to first know thyself. It's not simple. You don't just pop out knowing how to be a thoughtful, meaningful, relevant human being. So there are parts of us besides the technical and the practical and our muscular system. We have an emotional body, we have a psychological reality, and we have spiritual questions that are just going to be part of being alive. So I believe that those are the overlooked ones, and it's very easy to learn practical skills. But if you don't know how to deal with conflict, or you don't know how to deal when you're questioning yourself, or you're facing moral, ethical dilemmas, or when you have employees and things like that, it goes on and on. And how do you make choices, and where do you get a framework of how to be a good person and also accomplish what you want to accomplish? So I believe the psychological, emotional, and spiritual skills should be highly paid attention to, and that will pay off in huge value as the years go by. And there's something referred to as wisdom. That what is it? Who has it? How much does one have? I don't really know, but I would aspire. I did get a name like Solomon, so I guess it made me think I better better try to be wise at least. But that I really care about that, and that's the purpose of being alive, is to have those experiences and pass them on to other people, particularly future generations. So I think that's number one. Know yourself. Take responsibility and learn how to make changes when you need to. Be a better person.
Yeah. What a great way to end the podcast. Joel, I just want to say one last time, again, a big thank you for being with me here today. You bring a great perspective. I mean, you're a troublemaker like I am, so I like that. And you're obviously doing change in the world, which is important. So again, I just want to say a big thank you for being with me here today.
I so appreciate it. And thanks for the good high pace and the good questions.